The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball.
And then we had Eileen, who we kind of picked because we thought, you knows Irish football inside out, and then that'll do the job. And those kind of things aren't really what we need. We need a really, really good, strong coach.
Subscribe to the Koi Gig Pod on the Off the Ball app now.
Settle in.
On Off the Ball.
It's brought to you by Guinness 0.0.
All right, you're welcome along to the latest episode of Settle In on Off the Ball, brought to you by Guinness 0.0. And my special guest today is Sarah Byrne, ladies European Tour golfer. How are you?
I'm very good now, thank you. Good to be here.
How does that sound?
Nice, a bit surreal still, yeah. But sounds good.
Yeah, you've had a bit of time to think about it and enjoy knowing that the move to the professional ranks is going the way you want it to. Now that you're probably on the cusp of starting your Ladies European Tour experience and you're sitting down, you're planning out the year and all that, is the reality of what's coming starting to hit home?
A little bit, but it's also like, it's kind of been weird because obviously I got the card in like the 20th of December. Like, and now it's like still like not even a month, and like it's kind of like trying to plan a whole year. It's kind of hard to kind of settle in. It's kind of going from back of one on to straight on to the other, but it's the dream, and it was the goal, and like it felt really nice to get it. And now planning out a year, it feels pretty nice to have a full year to plan out and have employment for 2025, that's for sure.
Yeah, because golfing careers, maybe more than any other sport, it's so hard for them to pan out as expected, and lots of players have great college careers, great amateur careers, and then that next step is a big one. I'm sure you were aware of that when you finished up and such a brilliant amateur career.
Yeah.
Just a few months previous. Did you feel that weight of expectation on you?
A little bit, yeah. But I also was kind of like, I came off such a high off, obviously, Curtis Cup, but finishing like an amateur career. And that honestly just kind of gave me a wave of momentum. I kept getting invites throughout the whole time between September, October, and playing LET events and playing other pro events and stuff like that. And that really just whirlwinded into like the qualifying series, the Q schools. But I kind of felt that little bit of pressure because, like, I think having no employment for 2025 really was not what I wanted, or was kind of would have been detrimental to my career, I think, a little bit. Because for me, I just need to keep playing, like, yeah. I just keep riding a wave of momentum, and that was really big for me to just get some sort of status on any tour and to come back with starting 2025 with a full European Tour card and a full Epson Tour card. It's just like a dream start, really. It's exactly kind of what I would hoped for coming into 2025.
Like, that is a lot of pressure because, you know, you're so used to playing so much competitive golf in recent years at the highest possible level on the amateur side of things. If suddenly, you know, you were to have a bad week at the wrong time, things can grind to a halt pretty quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think, like, the last couple of weeks, like, or last couple kind of months that I've been playing, it was all Q schools of trying to get status on the tour, and like the consequences of not playing well that week. That's probably the one thing I'm really looking forward to for 2025, is just back playing competitive golf again. Like, yeah, there's consequence, but I always have next week. Like, with Q school, it was like, oh god, like I have to perform to get my status, to get onto the next stage, to try and get some sort of tour card for next year. And like, playing with that consequence was definitely, it was a little bit different. I kind of hadn't had that. And again, in amateur, like, if you have a bad week, just you enter the next event and play the next one. So like,
your livelihood isn't at stake.
Yeah,
as well.
Exactly. Like, a whole living wasn't at stake every week. So I think kind of doing that that was the start of my pro career, really, to have that kind of pressure and to be able to get through that. It really was a relief. But I kind of knew I was able to do it as well. Like, I kind of had college golf and the intensity of just the life that you were living in Division One student athlete. I honestly think that intensity and pressure kind of prepped me for it a little bit, and it was nice to be able to come off it successful. So yeah,
you're going into Q school right at the start of your career. I don't know what the makeup of the field was, because we've spoken about it on the men's side with Peter Laurie and Gary Murphy on our podcast so many times, and they went to Q school at, you know, coming towards the end and describing it as the worst week of their lives. Of, you know, they had kids at the time, and you're thinking, geez, like, if this doesn't work out, how do I go back home on Sunday night and say that's it? Were there players there with a very different mindset who were, you know, who've been through the ringer, and you're the fresh face coming out?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, even by the end of it, like, I was at the final stage of LPGA Q school in Alabama in the end of November, start of December, and like, there was a couple of fresh faces like me, but it was literally mainly just like people trying to come back, forgetting, like, you had Sofia Popov there. She had won the British Open there a couple of years ago, and it's kind of like she's back trying to get her card again with her kid and her husband there, you know, that kind of way. And it's kind of like there's just people from every sort of stage of their career at Q Schools, and it's such an intense week, and it's not that fun to play. Like, I love playing golf and competing, but those weeks are just that little bit harder, because it's, you're not competing for anything other than, like, just status, and that's the hardest thing really to play for.
And obviously you got your card, so you were able to play well, able to handle that pressure. When you compare it to a Curtis Cup, when you compare it to some of the big college events you played in America, how does it stack up?
It's, again, just like a kind of a different intensity. Now, like, Curtis Cup and stuff like that, it's always nice because you have, like, the viewership, you have the spectators around you kind of willing you on, and then Q School, it's a dogfight. You're there for yourself, and it's kind of like everyone's scrapping just to get the top 20 of the field or whatever to move on or get a card. So it's that little bit different, honest, but I love when things are a little bit more intense and kind of can focus in, so I kind of thrive off that kind of competitiveness.
It's like
a little bit.
It's so many events you play, it's about the winning. This one is just making sure you don't lose.
Yeah, exactly. It's that little bit different, but again, I kind of went in with the mentality to try and win. But like, that was kind of the best way. If you're trying to get first place, maybe 20th doesn't seem that hard to achieve. Do you know, that kind of way? I kind of went in that mentality of being like, may as well go into every golf event trying to win it. And that kind of was the same mentality that way.
So bring us maybe back then to the start and where the initial love of golf came from, and maybe the moments you start to realise, geez, I'm quite good at this.
Yeah, so I just got into golf because my dad was into it, really. Like, he kind of take me when I was really, really young, like, to the range, and if he was going off practicing, I'd be playing in the bunkers and kind of just having fun with it. And I started competing at 10. I played my first Golf Ireland event when I was 10 years of age in Castle Dargan and Connacht Girls. So it was kind of like, from a very early age, I kind of had an idea that I really wanted to play golf. Like, that's just what I wanted to compete and play. And Solheim Cup 2011, I think 2010 it was, and Killeen Castle, that was really, really big. I saw that and that was, I'm playing this. But that was it.
Okay.
Like, I was like, at that young age, I saw the players there and was like, these are the coolest people ever. I absolutely loved it. And I was like, I'm just going to do this. And then from there, I kind of just took off.
Can you talk a bit more about that? Because you often hear about that from sports people. Like, there is that one thing. And listen, we often, you know, speak about how this can be an inspiration for the next generation.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we spoke about it so much around the time of the Solheim Cup, because it was such a big event for this country. What happens in the car journey home and the weeks afterwards that you can actually realise that in real life?
I just remember walking around the play and like just being like starstruck by all this, and like the crowds there, the match play about it, I just absolutely loved it. And I remember probably a couple of days after, I was down practicing on the range with my dad, and I just looked up and I was like, do you think I'm going to play Solheim Cup? Because like, I'm going to play it someday. I think he was just like laughing at me, like 10 year old me saying this. But just that kind of thing. And even like, I just remember Karen Stupples she was playing Solheim Cup and she was left out for one of the matches, and she was running around like having fun with all the fans, and I was like, God, I love her, like she's so cool. And she actually ended up being my one of the assistant captains at Curtis Cup, which was bizarre, kind of a full circle moment for me, really. I was like, you're one of the reasons I play golf, and now you're one of my captains for Curtis Cup. So it was kind of cool like that. But kind of just, there is little moments like that, and like just kind of winning my first like ladies competition in Douglas Golf Club when I was 10 and 11, and then winning my first girls event, and like kind of then winning the Close then in 2017. There was just kind of like a gradual thing where being like, oh, I love it, I want to keep going, I want to keep going. And then just kind of took off, really. But Solheim Cup was probably, when having it in Ireland, was probably the deciding factor. I mean, I just got there and I just had that feeling. I was like, this is going to be me.
Yeah.
So it's funny how like events like that plan can happen in Ireland, can just like start off a career, really.
Can't see it, can't be it line.
Yeah, literally, that was it. Yeah.
Your dad's here. He's your manager now. Your relationship with him and golf then, was there a... he brought you for a bit of crack, or did he realise quite early on there was a bit of talent and pushed you along? How did that relationship develop?
I actually do ask him this quite a lot. I was like, did you think that we'd ever be here? Like, kind of, and he kind of laughs and he's like, I always knew there was something special.
Right.
Like the way you kind of went around the game, and like if you hit a bad shot, you weren't like, you got annoyed by it, and it was kind of like you were trying to figure out why. But he was like, you were always good. He was like, you could always tell that there was something there. And then obviously, like, I just had the love for the game. And from very early on, it was intense, though. We kind of knew that we were doing this not just obviously for fun and the love of the game, but I think from very early on we kind of knew the journey that we were going to be on, really.
Right. What age?
Literally, I say about maybe 11, 12, 13, okay. Kind of. By the time I was 13, we were traveling around Europe playing in golf events and traveling to the States playing golf events. And I think when you're at that point and that young, it's kind of, and investing that much, it's kind of like, you know, you're on the journey to try and become. Like I just said it, I said to my parents, I was like, I want to go to America for college. I want to go and be on the LPGA. I want to play Solheim Cup. And I was like, that's what I want to do. So let's give it a go. And here we are.
Were there many wobbles in those sort of early teenage years when, you know, friends are going in different mm-hmm. paths and golf has to be all-consuming if you want to get to that very elite level? Were there moments where you're thinking, actually, do I want to get another flight this weekend?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There was times I wanted to give it up, to be right. honest. And the most addicting game ever. Actually, that's what I say, golf is addicting. You just can't. It's obviously, every athlete goes through as much hardship, but I think kind of going through, like, secondary school. And at the time, like, it's a lot better now. It's like, women's golf really wasn't that big. I was the only one to do it in my whole school and my whole primary school, my whole secondary school. I was the only golfer, so all my friends were like, what? Mm. And like, I don't think they understood at the time either, like, oh, why aren't you coming out with us, or hey, have a golf lesson, why can't you come for this sleepover, why can't you come on this school tour? Like,
yeah.
I was like, I have to go to France to play in this event, like, that's why I can't come, or like, the Munster Championship is on, like, I can't, I need to prep for that. So like, it was hard throughout those years to manage it, but like, I was kind of selfish in a way that like, I always knew what I wanted, and that came above anything else. Like, it was easy for me to sacrifice all the nights out or all the, like, going to do stuff with my friends. It was just easy for me because I was like, I want this.
Yeah, very single-minded.
Yeah, and, like, to be fair, I think Nike came out with a quote, like, greatness just takes everything. Like, and that's what it does. Like, it takes absolutely everything out of you. And, like, I was committed to that from a very early age, and that was obviously hard to do. And, like, going through those years, I think it was like 14, 15, 16, kind of around those years were the hardest. But then I was got my college commitment and stuff like that, and that kind of helped kind of get me through that kind of hardship. But I think every person kind of goes through that. But for me, it wasn't enough to stop me from playing golf, really.
Yeah, because, well, for any elite sports person, but particularly in those individual sports, you got to give every bit of yourself in those mm-hmm. teenage years, and there's no guarantee that the success is going to come at the end of it. And like, when you're probably, you know, concentration at school is maybe focused elsewhere and at golf at times.
Yeah.
You know, are there people along the way who are questioning you as to whether this is the right path for you? Or is everybody very supportive?
Most people are very supportive now, to be fair. But I also have been, I don't know, is it just my luck or what? But I've always surrounded myself with really good people and like a really, really good team. Like my parents and most of my friends, they were, as much as they didn't know what was going on, they were trying to be as supportive as possible. And I was quite lucky in that sense that everyone was, maybe teachers and missing exams maybe was not quite the best. They were kind of maybe asking if I could change dates of golf tournaments. I was like, that's not quite how
right,
it works. But I think all in all, everyone was fairly supportive. And if they weren't, I kind of was like, well, I'm doing it anyway. So.
Yeah. Like, I'm sure you've never done an interview where Leona Maguire's name mm-hmm. hasn't come up.
Yeah.
Like that path that you can go on, I'm sure for, you know, a lot of teachers, a lot of people, when you were starting out at 11, 12 and you're starting to think about college golf and, you know, wanting to ultimately play Solheim Cup, well, they're wondering how you go from 11 to the Solheim Cup because it's not like being a footballer where you go for trials and all that. People just don't know. Were you aware of what each step was along the way? Would you have looked at Leona's path as the one you wanted to follow? Or who were the examples you looked at?
Honestly, at the time, mostly just Leona, just because she was the only golfer to come out of Ireland, really. And it was kind of like you didn't really hear the ins and outs of every other person's story if you're a different country. So it was mainly Leona. Like, obviously, it was a very high standard of amateur golfer, like the number one amateur in the world for so long. And she kind of set such a good standard of the pathway of it. So like, play a really good amateur time and then go and go to the States and play collegiate golf over there and get a good college, be surrounding yourself with the best players, honestly the best amateurs in the world really are all based in the States, and play around there and then kind of go to Q schools once you're done to turn pro. So I think she had such a successful time throughout her amateur career, her college career, and then obviously towards professional golf as well. So like, she kind of really set a golden pathway really of what to do and follow, and that was really all we had to go off, really.
And funnily enough, she's probably a bit of an outlier in terms of American golf, where, you know, you go back to that Solheim Cup, Lexi Thompson was there as part of the junior Solheim, and, you know, was was starting to play major championships at sort of 12, 13, and now we see, you know, Lexi retiring at a very young age. In the women's game, you know, players can turn pro very, very young.
Mm-hmm.
Was that ever in your head of actually, well, maybe I can skip some of these steps?
No, I wasn't good enough. Right. I wasn't good enough to turn pro at that point.
Yeah.
And, like, I knew that, like, the pro was always the dream, but I had so much learning to do. I had so much maturing to do. I had a lot of golf balls to be hit to get better.
Okay.
So that really was never part of my journey. Like, it's hard to be a prodigy, though. You can see it kind of throughout the years of the girls that were so good at such a young age,
right,
turn pro and it not work out for them either. So I kind of had... I did promise my mom I'd go to college and get a stick out college and
yeah,
get a 4-year degree and have that in my back pocket. So that was always my plan of I was going to go to college, do the collegiate side. And honestly, the timing of it all really worked well for me. Like, by the time my 4 years was up in college, then I was like, okay, I'm ready now to finish and to turn pro. But before that, I honestly wasn't. So the timing of everything really just aligned up for me.
Yeah. When you look at some of those players you're probably playing at 15, 16, 17, who were probably been pressured to turn pro, who were the very best players at that age and who are maybe, you know, not quite there now. What are the reasons, do you think, that they fell down? Is it the pressure? Is it that there's an overinflated sense of their skill set at the time?
Yeah, I honestly, like, I do think about it quite a lot because I do think as well it's just like, you need to also have a bit of a life, do you know? Like, I feel like a lot of people, like, it works for some, like, where the, like, if you're just kind of blinders on the whole way throughout your teenage life and turn pro so early and have a really good start or whatever, and then it honestly just doesn't work. I think they just don't have anything else. Like, that's all that they were primed to do, and it's, you have to have a balance. Like, that was what I've learned. It's like, as much as it's so intense, you need to be able to turn it off. And, like, I try to take one day off a week of nothing and be able to see my friends, and, like, that's a really, really big thing of having a balance. Like, as there's golf and then there's me as a person, and I think a lot of prodigies throughout the years, they just merge it into one, and it's kind of like how they golf is how they are as a person, and
yeah,
it's kind of, I don't think you have that separation, and I think that is really, really big. So I think that's kind of, my mom was kind of a sounding board to all this. Like, if I had a bad round and was really upset, she'd be like, just give it up, move on. Like,
give it up.
This stupid game. I was like, no.
is that being a supportive parent?
Yeah, very much so. It
yeah,
really was. If I wanted it out, I had it. But
yeah,
no,
yeah.
I kind of was like, no, this isn't gonna defeat me. And I'm still going. So, like, I think that's a big part of it, is just not having a big enough balance throughout it all.
And that sort of moment of realization around the balance side of it seems to come at different times for different people. We had Connor Purcell here in studio, and he was saying, I think it was during COVID, kind of when he couldn't go and travel, couldn't go and play all of the time, suddenly this realization of, well, what else do I have?
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
A lot of young athletes in particular, unfortunately, just don't ever reach that point, and burnout kicks in. And
exactly, that's all it is. It's just the burnout kicks in, and then they're kind of stuck at being like, what do I have now? And I think that's kind of where crisis kind of comes in. But for me, that's never really been an issue. Like, I had it to even like throughout secondary school and primary school, like, I always had, like, my friends to have an out. And then when I went to college, I was very lucky. I went to college in Miami, a big city. Like, if I wanted a day off, I could go to the beach. There was stuff to do. I had the best friends over there that were all athletes from different sports, where we all needed a day off. We all could be a sounding board for each other. Like, they didn't want to, like, they'd be venting about volleyball or baseball or soccer, and then that would take my mind off golf in a second. So, like, it was kind of, I was very good in the sense of having a really good, like, kind of work-life balance.
What age were you when you went to Miami?
I was 19.
Yeah.
I was just turned 19.
Shocked to the system?
Little bit, but I also was very lucky to be going to Florida a lot to play golf throughout my early years, and I just absolutely loved the heat, and bit of a different culture than Cork, I have to say.
It's a bit more modest there in Miami.
Just a little bit. But no, I absolutely loved it over there. The weather was perfect for golf, and it was a pretty cool city to live in for a little bit.
Yeah, you went down the Paul Carrington route, did you, in terms of college, the accountancy?
Yes, I did, accounting and finance. Again, I did promise to get a good degree out of it all if I was going to have anything to fall back on. I mean, as if I was going to a nice private college, I'd get a good degree out of it.
Yeah, there'll be no dodgy agents down the track if screw you over for cash or anything.
Absolutely
like that.
Anyways, not.
That's the main thing.
Absolutely not. No.
That college system, Leona Maguire went through it, Stephanie Meadow went through it. It's a tried and trusted and proven method of progress, because by the sounds of it, the standard that you're playing at is at an incredibly high level.
Yeah, honestly, like, it just, I think sports in general in America, honestly, like, collegiate sports is bigger than the professional sports at this point, and you're primed and prepped and to do everything as a professional athlete. Like, honestly, the things I do now is exactly the same as what I did in college. Right. Like, it was that intense. Like, it was like strict schedules up at 5:30, 6 o'clock every morning to practice, to workouts, to class, and then by the time class was done, it was 7, 8 o'clock at night, and you were getting into bed to do the same thing the next day. And it was kind of the breathed into the mentality of, like, you do everything you do to get better and to make yourself better and to be a better athlete. And I thrived off that. I absolutely loved the intensity of it, and they really just prep you. If you do it the right way and have the right mentality towards it, that if they're harsh on you, like the coaches, and you're having a hard time, it's not anything just but to make you better. And I think I really had that mentality kind of about it all, and I was able to take it in.
Did you have that going over, or did you need to learn it when you were there?
I think maybe the first year and a half to, like, really kind of, really had to settle in and then kind of realize it. But I think, like, I kind of matured a little bit, got a little bit older, and kind of was at the point where I'd do anything to get better. And I was like, yeah, if the coaches are there to help you, not, like, I was lucky in the sense I had very good coaches, and that was their intentions. Like, obviously, you can be unlucky, and it can be hard if you go to the wrong spot, if you don't get the right spot for you in America. Like, for me, I had the offer from a national championship school that had just won it, and I didn't want to be out in Arizona, so I was like, let me just see. And I really wanted to go to Florida. Miami was ranked like 18th or 19th in the rankings, and I was like, that's absolutely perfect. The weather is good. It's a good high, like, standard of school as well. So I just... it's all about picking the right place for you as a person. For me, that was the perfect spot for me, really.
What's a good coach for you? What were you looking for? Was it somebody on the technical side of the game, or all of the other stuff?
All the other stuff. Right. Technically, I've had the same technical coach since I was 14, Fred Toomey in Cork, and it's exactly what I didn't want anything else on that side. But mentally, I probably wasn't there, and that's where, like, my college coaches really came in to help me on that kind of stuff, and just kind of, like, maturing me as a person, really, and kind of learning to deal with the adversity of it all.
What sort of things were they teaching you?
Like, I suppose, like, just how to deal with, like, a bad day on the course, a bad day off the course, and kind of, like, how to... I was kind of an expressive emotion, like a high emotion girl, and, like, especially if things weren't going well, I was really struggling to kind of handle that, and they really were kind of getting me into the mentality that if you can always get it back, and, like, if you hit a bad shot, that's okay. Like, I was kind of chasing this kind of dream of a perfect round or a perfect swing or perfect shots, and that's not what golf is about, and honestly, that's not what life's about either. It's kind of getting over the challenges of it all, and that's kind of got me into the mood of, if I did hit a bad shot or if I was going through a challenge, like, I was kind of competitive enough to be like, okay, well, let's see what we can do, let's have a little bit of, like, a cool story, what could happen here, like, yeah, right. I hit a really bad shot, but let's see what the next shot kind of is. So they kind of changed my mentality in that sense.
So if we watch it out on course then in the coming months, and, you know, things aren't going well, or there's a bad shot, as will happen in every round, like, are you completely zen about it now, or do you have a different way of letting off steam?
I wouldn't quite say zen about it all. I usually have a little outburst, slam a club, kind of get the anger out. There's no point of holding it in. That's not good. I'm still like, in a very high emotion,
right,
person.
What's the over-under for the year on amount of snap clubs there's going to be?
Zero snap clubs. Okay. We're not going that far, but there will be more than likely be a few club slams. Hopefully not too bad language. That's another thing.
Oh,
I need
really?
To try tone that down a little bit. But again, that you just need to get it out and then move on and get on with it. But just, like, I always thought Tiger Woods did that. He had like a 10-second kind of little rule for himself. So I was like, worked for him.
It's such an interesting part of the game. And, you know, Shane Lowry gets criticism at times for his reaction. He says, like, you know, I play my best golf and I'm running hot, and obviously even we saw Tyrrell Hatton winning recently, and, you know, it doesn't seem to matter whether he hits a good shot or a bad shot, he's generally quite angry about it. And you wonder, well, would you be an even better golfer if you just give yourself a break from time to time, or actually does he need that tension with himself to get the very best out? Have you looked into that as to what actually works best for you?
Yeah, like, a little bit. Well, I always find out that if, like, if I just get a little bit mad, like if I get mad and kind of that kind of clicks me back into concentration a little bit, and I kind of use that energy and adrenaline for a positive way. Like for me, if I was just not too reactive, shot, it just wouldn't. That just doesn't work for me.
Good or bad, it
just doesn't work. Like I got.
You like that since kid?
Yeah, I really have been. I think there's a few funny videos of me walking around in a strap around Douglas Golf Club when I was about 6, 7, 8, kind of after not having hitting a good shot. So it's kind of always been like that, but it's now managing it to help me in a way and not let it be detrimental towards anything, really.
Yeah. College golf, is it a mix of stroke play and match play or more match play?
Mainly stroke play. Okay. The match play would only ever come if it's like a conference championship final or the national championship finals. That's only like literally twice a year usually. And it's all mainly stroke play. So yeah, kind of 3-round stroke play usually is what it is.
On the purely golfing side of it then, did it take long to feel comfortable with the quality of players that were around you in Miami?
I suppose it did a little bit. Like it was kind of weird. My first semester was kind of COVID, so there was no golf. So then I kind of had a settling in period.
That's tough to head over at that period.
Yeah, right in August 2020, right smack bam in the middle of it all. I hopped on a plane by myself and jetted off to Miami. It's like bizarre experience.
Any doubts about going or?
No, I kind of was like, get me out here. I was like, America doesn't seem to be on lockdown. I played golf every day. It was kind of ideal, really. But not in a competitive sense. I just was able to practice and stuff. Yeah. But by the time the second semester came around, like, the people there were a little bit older. I was the only first year really to come in, and everyone else was a little bit older, a little bit more experienced. But again, I have that kind of competitiveness about me. I was like, well, I want to be the best. So I was like, I need to be the best on the team. And it kind of, obviously I wasn't at the beginning, and it kind of took me up until my last year really to really kind of be that kind of dominating figure that I wanted to be on the team. So it kind of did take me that 2.5-3 years to get there fully. But again, that's the like point of having a good team. Like, it's an individual sport, but kind of having the team around me was really beneficial of trying to be the best and kind of have that kind of competitive edge. And it was kind of like who was going to work the hardest. So it was kind of like, it was kind of unsaid thing of who was going to leave first, and it just kept going and going and going, really kind of between us all on the team, which was quite fun.
Is there a bit of pressure then when you come back home and you're playing in some of the amateur tournaments here in Ireland as rocking back in from Miami?
A little bit, but honestly, again, like I liked that little bit of pressure and a little bit of intensity. It kind of gives me something to focus on and motivates me to work that little bit harder and stuff like that. So it was a little bit hard, and because obviously as well, it's different golf. Like, I'm coming back from Miami where it's hot and golf courses in America are irrigated, there's so much spin, and then I'm turning up in Lynx golf courses and it's blowing a gale and I'm hitting this high ball and I'm like, okay, we gotta change it up. So it's just different golf. It's in a little bit different mentality as well. It's kind of like scraping for pairs as good around Port Marnock at an amateur championship than trying to have 7 or 8 birdies in a row on like an American golf course. So it's again, it's just switching up that mentality.
Yeah, I remember Rory up at Royal County Down and everyone saying, well, this is, you know, his favourite golf course at the Irish Open, and it obviously must suit your eye. And he's like, well, not anymore. Like, my game is built for the American sunshine and America, and coming here is, you know, none of us are really used to this anymore. So
it's hard to go from that hitting that high spinning American shot. It's American golf, and coming back to Lynx golf, it's quite the kind of learning experience again to come back and try and hit that low spin and having gusts and gales and of like pins kind of like nearly out of the hole because of how windy it is. But again, it's all the fun of it, really.
You must be incredibly pleased with how 2024 went, and, you know, particularly the finale of the Curtis Cup and how you performed individually and winning your singles and having gone through unbeaten, and even the very fact that you won it, which you know, has been a difficulty for recent times. The Curtis Cup and knowing your amateur career was coming to an end around then, how much pressure and expectation were you putting on yourself going into it?
A little bit. Now, to be fair, I just played LPGA Q School literally the week before. I'd flown straight from California to London to play the Curtis Cup, so I was kind of coming off such a high from that, and because I had gotten through that, and kind of that was kind of the start of kind of the push into the professional side. But yeah, honestly, I kind of, when playing Curtis Cup, it was that was the best week of my life. It's going to be really hard to top that in a full career, no matter what. Like, that was because of how kind of big it was for my career as well, really kind of shooting it off. But that week was just really, really good. It was a little bit pressurizing, but I also was kind of coming into week. I'd never played a Curtis Cup before. Like, obviously, I'd played against all the girls against America. I'd played against all the GBI ones before, but it was kind of, you're kind of thrown into this environment. This was my first time playing on TV, really. I was like, oh my God, having this amount of crowds, I was like, oh my God. But I honestly, that's why I play golf. Like, I absolutely loved the like intensity of that and the atmosphere. Like, it was just, I thrived off it. I loved having the crowds there, like cheering for shots and stuff like that. It was just a great, great week. And then I think as well, the more pressurizing thing was having Katrina Matthew as a captain, and she had won both her Solheims, and I was like, we ain't losing. We can't be her losing. We can't be the end of her winning streak. But it was never going to be the way we were, like the way the whole week was prepped for us. And it was just incredible, the kind of experiences. Like, I was having breakfast with Sam Torrance. I was having lunch with Charlie Hull and Justin Rose, and Colin Montgomery was coming in and talking to us. I was like, just a bit in awe the whole week. And then obviously then once the golf came around, it was just laser focus, really. We had a job to do, and it was just really, really good, and it was just fantastic. It hit me that it was the last amateur round when I finally hold the putt on the 16th in the singles, and I look over my parents, and both of them are basically, my mom was bawling, crying. You could see my dad a little bit emotional. I was like, oh God. And it hit me then, and I was like, that's it. Like, that's the end of that. But it was honestly just like, picture perfect. I could not have asked for a better week. I couldn't have dreamt of a better week, really, to end it all off. But honestly, I had worked so hard the last kind of couple of years that it was really just nice. It was a really nice feeling for it all to pay off in that way. And then for obviously us to win Curtis Cup, it was just huge for us, and especially when it was at home. Well, in GB, it was in Sunnydale, London, London, kind of at home for us. And it was it was a pretty nice week.
Yeah, it sounds as though it couldn't have really gone any better. Mm-hmm. Those experiences you have during the week, and you know, getting to spend time with Katrina Matthew, and again, you know, someone who was a pivotal figure back in Killeen Castle when you've been inspired to start it all, and you know, meeting Charlie Hull and Justin Rose and Sam Torrance, is that just an experience that happens across the week? Or are you trying to pick their brains?
We were kind of picking their brains a little bit. Obviously, like, we talked a lot, obviously, with Katrina and Karen Sub and Catherine and Marie and all that. And, like, the whole week there were our captains and was there for us to ask questions. So it was kind of cool to, like, I was talking to them about Colleen. I was like, I remember watching you, and, like, you are the reason I'm here, basically. So it was kind of cool to do that. But, like, Justin Rose is really cool. Like, he was kind of giving us what he feels when he's playing Ryder Cups and stuff like that. So picking, like, he came to us on the Thursday morning, so that was our last practice round before teeing it up on Friday, and it was really cool to kind of hear his perspective on it and kind of talk us through, like, the nerves of it. And he was just like, if the TV cameras are in your way, like, just give them a minute. Like, kind of just different stuff that, like, we wouldn't have heard before, kind of in his sense. So that was really cool. And, like, Sam Torrance talked through Sunnydale with us over breakfast, and after I called my dad, I was like, in what world did you think I was going to be eating scrambled egg with Sam Torrance talking through Sunnydale? I was like, so that was a bit kind of surreal, a little bit. But we were definitely picking their brains. Into obviously Charlie Hull is like a massive idol for any golfer. Like, for me, she's an idol. Like, I love her. I think her whole mentality around the game of golf is really cool. And to have her, she came in the middle of our day on the Saturday. I came in for lunch between the foursomes and the four ball that afternoon. I just had lunch, and she was sitting there kind of talking through how she would prepare and like how she doesn't put in the pins the round, and she doesn't do stats and all that. So it was kind of cool to hear her kind of side of it and how she plays and perspective on the game. So it was really cool to kind of hear their side of their side of stuff.
And even such different personalities there, that there's no one size that fits all in terms of how you make it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's such an individual game that, like, just what works for you is what works for you. And it's, I think we had very opposite sides between Colin Montgomery and Charlie Hull and between it all, really. But it was really cool to kind of get all their perspectives. And, like, you're never really going to have that kind of sort of week ever again, really, especially for me anyway. So it was kind of cool.
Especially to finish up your amateur career like that. And your parents watching on, is there almost a... As you know, you go back to your mother saying, you can give it all up, and your mother's like, we don't have to pay for this anymore, you're on your own now.
Yeah, literally, it's like, cut off. It's just all you now.
You're a professional.
You have a full-time job now, this is all on you. But no, obviously it's been, like, they've been a massive help towards everything, and no, they're very supportive throughout it all. But I think it was kind of maybe a kind of a cool moment for them as well to see it all kind of just all round up an amateur career and now onto the pro one. But to be fair, I think the pro one is a little bit more stressful in managing it all, because now it's all on your own now, and it's like that's it. That's it's all on you. And
you had to shift your mentality around that, because I bring up Conor Nolan's book all the time when I'm talking to golfers, and particularly if you've read it, the tennis player, and you know he's having moments of doubts and struggling in tennis, and he goes home and he's expecting a sympathetic ear, and his mother's like, "This is your job now, Conor." Mm-hmm. Like, you know, tough.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, you don't want to go out next week. Yeah. This is your job. Yeah. You gotta go.
Yeah, no, a little bit. Kind of just in the sense that, like, everything's been like, I had 4 years of college golf and everything was organized for me. Like, my every single day was planned out for me. My golf trips were all planned. I was just told. Very much pampered. I was a little pampered princess throughout college, and like everything was done for me. So a little bit in the sense of trying to just get everything scheduled and organized, just like day-to-day stuff, like trying to get my gym scheduled, trying to get my practice scheduled, trying to see friends and kind of stuff like that. That just in that sense, it's a little bit harder. But honestly, again, I do anything to get better, and like I know what I have to do, and I know how much work it takes. And I've been really, really lucky to have my dad be my manager. I like to call him my dadager, dad manager. And like, honestly, I've been so freed up by that, because all he's just like, go play golf, go practice, like let me take care of the admin work. And I have to say, I'm extremely lucky, and not everyone has that, and it's really, really been a massive help, really.
Yeah, he's sitting outside the door, so you can't say just nice things, because you know, particularly in individual sports, there's obviously so many examples of fathers and daughters, and that influence at times been overbearing.
A little bit. Like, I think at this point we know that he can't caddy for me, really.
Okay.
I think his role is very good as dadager, caddy, maybe. I think might just take a little bit
just
of
not good enough at the yardages, or what's the...
Maybe just strains on the relationship. Okay. A little bit. Dad-daughter comes out instead of caddy player,
right.
Sometimes a little bit. Which that's to say with every sport,
yeah.
Really. But
yeah.
No, it's been really good, though.
Who are the people you can sort of talk to over the last few weeks, or even the next few weeks, when you're plotting out your year? Because, you know, Leona is the obvious example, but she went a different route and sort of went straight LPGA tour. You know, there haven't been a huge amount of Irish golfers on the Ladies European tour over the last few years. Who are the people you can lean on to get some advice? Even because I know there's a good crew you're heading in this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, honestly, anyone. Like between Katrina Matthew has always been... She's ever since we Curtis Cup, she's like, if you have any questions at all, just let us know. But like, just players, like, I know people that have grown up that maybe I was only like 12, 13, they were like 15, 16, 17. They're all on the European tour for a couple of years, and past Miami players on LPGA or on LET and stuff like that. I just have loads of people that I can ask as caddies that are from Douglas Golf Club that have caddied on the LPGA, on the LET, on PGA tour. Like, there's just everyone, if I ever need, I can ask from a range of different levels, which is really, really cool. But honestly, like, I'm kind of... Leona played a year on Epson on the feeder tour before she made it to LPGA, and like, that's again the kind of the route that I want to kind of go take. So again, she's been like, if I ever have questions, I know that I can. But honestly, at this point, I've again a really good team that I've been able to kind of realize stuff for myself really quickly and kind of learn. But again, I have I know so many people out on tour already that I see them nearly every week anyway, and they're like, if you have any questions, like my first kind of couple of European tour events and the European tour access events as well, the feeder tour for that, like the first couple of events I played in them, me and my dad were asking a million questions. I say they saw us coming, they were like, please, no more questions. So we kind of, because like, it is really hard, there's so much, like, not even just the golf, like the admin side of stuff that goes into it. It's just the amount of rules and regulations that you just don't even know. And like, you have to kind of have experienced or know someone that has experienced to really know all the ins and outs. So like, it's just, even like Lauren Walsh, like she had a year on LET or like half a year on LET before I got to tee it up in my two LET events that I had played. And like, I was asking Lauren a million questions. I still do. I still text her every week to ask, so what did you do for this? And what did you do for this? And like, this car hire or this hotel or this event or like this caddy or like whatever. So it's kind of just all the friends that I know that have gone through it all. It's just ask them a million questions all the time, really.
The LET and the getting your card for that was obviously what sort of made the headlines, but you mentioned the Epson Tour there, the feeder for the LPGA. Is that actually more important for you this year than the LET?
Yeah, so for right now, that's my priority. Like, my priority is to make it to the LPGA. Unfortunately, I just fell short in that for coming into 2025 to have a full LPGA Tour card. I didn't get through the last stage of the Q Series for LPGA. I got my full Epson Tours, which is obviously the secondary tour for that, and to get on the LPGA, you gotta go through your Epson, you gotta go through the feeder tour. So for me, that's my priority, just because like, I want to be on the LPGA in 2026 and 2027, and like, that's a big thing. And as like it was really, really good to get the European Tour card, and I think it was also vital just to have more options than just the Epsom Tour. So to have that was obviously fantastic, and I'm going to play in a few LET events, but for right now, the first half of the season, it's prioritise Epsom over anything else, and when I can play LET, I will. So that's because if I get in the top 10 or 15 in the Order of Merit on Epsom Tour, like I get a full LPGA Tour card, and I don't want to go. Q Schools, they were the four times I've played in them in the last couple of months, they were fantastic, but I think that was just enough for me for a little bit. So yeah. Just to try and get an LPGA as quickly as possible really is the plan.
Because look, the LET's been through a difficult time of it. Like, is it at a stage now that it's probably still hard to even make a living on the LET, even if you're doing well, or is...
You can make a pretty like solid enough living if you're doing really well in the LET. Yeah. You'd be fine. And like obviously they have their Aramco series events and their 5 million purses, or even more than an average LPGA Tour events. But again, there are only five or six of them a year, so you can definitely make a pretty solid enough living. But the LPGA, that's kind of where it's at. It's yeah. where the top players are at. It's the best golf course in the world. It's a little bit easier to get to in and out, and it's just like when I was younger I dreamed of being on the LPGA, you know, and that's just where I want to be. I love America. I play better in America. It's weird. Kind of obviously college golf kind of primed me for that a little bit, and like I love the LET. It is honestly, it's a better product than the LPGA. You get to travel the world, but for like the LPGA, it's honestly just that little bit bigger, a little bit bigger prize money and like bigger world ranking points, and that's where the dream is really, to play on the LPGA. So but the LET, like, it's a fantastic tour. It's just like I just want to play on the LPGA really.
Yeah. What's the part of your game you need to focus on to make that next step then to get to LPGA to be able to contend on LPGA?
Honestly, just again, it's just kind of maintaining everything. Like, I've built up such a good foundation in my swing and the mechanics of it all, and it's just kind of just getting that little bit better in everything as well, like just kind of maintaining that. And like I've been working a lot on my putting and my short game, getting the creativity, because obviously when you go play bigger, like I learned that in playing LPGA Q School and playing on the LPGA golf course, it's like you just need that little bit more creativity of how the golf course there, the greens are faster, more undulating, so kind of learning a bit than that, and honestly just learning the life of a pro, like a little bit in the mental side of it, like kind of the different aspects. There's so much travel. Like, I think people forget that, yeah, you see us on TV or see Rory on TV on one continent 1 week, and then a couple of days later he's in the next one. You kind of forget how it goes from one side to the other, and there is a lot of travel. So I think just handling that, and then obviously it's my first full year as a professional golfer too, so I think I just want to like kind of play as good as golf, but just learn as well.
Yeah.
Just figure, like, you kind of just have to go through it, go through the motions of it all to really learn, kind of figure out what works. But like, my golf game is there, I know it's good enough. It's just kind of learning to kind of try and peak at the right times as well.
Yeah. It all sounds incredibly exciting. So when's the first event?
There's two. The first two events will hopefully be the European Tour events that are on in February. Again, admin issues with trying to get my American visa. So I currently don't have my passport. So it's in the US Embassy at the moment. So whenever that comes back to me and I can fly again and try and get to the first two LET events, the one in Morocco and then there's another one in Saudi Arabia. But mainly the first Epsom events are in the end of February, start of March in Orlando. So those are definitely 100% the first three events that I'm going to be playing in March. But hopefully, if I get my passport back in time, we can start on the LET. Because I do want to play on the LET. I got my full card and I want to try and keep that status. And again, it's around Europe. It feels a bit more at home, and I definitely want to play around that. So it's hopefully the start of February, we'll see.
They might see a bit more around Douglas over the next few months.
I hope so. But yeah, no, I am going to be going back stateside 100% though come March. I'm playing that, and then hopefully come back and play a couple more LET events in between the breaks of it all.
Are you seeing Carlton House this year?
100%, I hope so. So yeah, it's going to be that one I'm really looking forward to. That's always going to be, I think, for me, playing at home in an Irish Open like that, that's always going to be a highlight of a year. I think even like everyone says that Rory always loves coming back playing, Shane loves coming back playing. It's just, there's just something different about playing in front of a home crowd, or just an Irish crowd. Irish people in general love sporting events and give as much support, and I played the Irish Open 2 years ago in Dromoland Castle, and honestly, like, bringing that event back, the Irish Open, is just such a big thing for women's golf. It gives us the publicity and gives us an event for people to watch, you know. And it kind of put, like, again, it's like the Solheim Cup, like, you know, for me, having it there kind of set a trend for me. And so I hope that the Irish Open can kind of do that for young girls coming up now, and how big women's golf is getting, not only just in Ireland but in the world. But I'm really, really, really looking forward to getting back playing the Irish Open now this year.
Yeah, and I think you'll probably even see a big difference in terms of support from a couple of years ago, where, you know, at that stage it was all built around Leona, and you're hoping Stephanie Meadow might come over as well, whereas this year there's going to be half a dozen of pros out there.
Yeah, seriously, there's going to hopefully be like six to even more Irish professionals there, and I think that's just massive to be able to say, and I think the crowds are going to love it, and I'm really, really like, I just know it's going to be a fantastic week no matter what happens individually or anything. It's just going to be a great week for women's golf, really.
Yeah, well, look, we'll keep a very close eye on everything that happens between now and then, and hopefully get a chance to catch up in Carton House over the course of the summer. Sarah,
absolutely,
very best of luck. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much.
Settle In
on Off The Ball
is brought to you by Guinness 0.0.